This podcast is brought to you by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
G'day, this is Wilbur Wilde. You are listening to Gavin Wood's podcast.
One of the big names in the Australian music industry has played saxophone all his life and is a television and radio star. He has been with two of the great bands, Old 55 and Jojo Zepp and the Falcons, and of course you'd remember him from Hey Hey It's Saturday. He is, of course, the great Wilbur Wilde. Hello to my podcast guest, Wilbur Wilde. Hello, Wilbur.
Hello, Gavvy. How are you, man?
Mate, I'm very well. It's great to be talking to you. Now, we've got a lot to cover because you are such an interesting character.
Yeah, great. Yeah, okay. You go first.
Born Nicholas Robert Aitken back in the mid-50s. I'd like to find out about your early years, Wilbur, because they're the years I don't know about.
Yeah, no worries.
Okay, you were born in Melbourne. Where in Melbourne?
I was born at St Andrew's Hospital, which was the Presbyterian Hospital, and mum and dad, so I was born in 1955. And look, you mentioned Nicholas Robert Aitken. I am still known to, at 6'5" and the wrong side of 200, I'm still known to quite a few people as Little Nicky, Phyllis's boy. So, you know, which is nice.
That's lovely.
So, so we grew up in Lower Plenty until I was about 15, and then I moved to Planet Ivanhoe because I was going to school down here, and I pretty much spent the rest of my life down here, although I went to the Gold Coast for a year, Gold Coast, Brisbane, and I worked in the nightclub up there. That was when I was 18, mm-hmm. In 1974. And then I came back to Sydney to study at the Conservatorium of Music in 1975. And that's where I joined Old 55. And I stayed in Sydney for a couple of years. But Melbourne, like in particularly Planet Ivanhoe, has always been my patch.
Right. Now, you've got a brother, Chris. Any other siblings?
Yeah, I've got a little sister, Andrea. And I don't know, Gavin, how little sisters get to be 64. What's going on with that? She's our little sister and she's, 64.
I know, but we've all eaten the right foods and had a wonderful life and we've done it well. We haven't over-excessed.
Well, speaking as the poster boy for self-restraint myself, I agree wholeheartedly with you. Now, Andy, she is married to a mate of mine from school. Actually, the families were good friends. My big brother, who you mentioned, he played footy for Melbourne. He's 7 years my senior, and I golfed with him only last Monday, and the three of us are still very close. Phyllis, the aforementioned Phyllis, grand dame that she was, rode on ahead about 15 years ago now. Right. We miss her, but as anybody with a family and a mother and a sister knows, we miss mum. But it's okay because Andrea, our little sister, has actually turned into mum, and so that's great.
So how was school for a young Nicholas Aitken?
School was good fun. Not everyone had the same experience that I had, and you find that out with one of my old schoolmates back in 2016 was the centenary of our school, right. And we took it upon ourselves to there was a big dinner in Buckley Hall. The school hall, and we took it upon ourselves to host a little cocktail party at Nigel's place, my mate's, and we sent out emails to it would have been maybe 80, 85 guys, and it was a boys' school in our year. And look, eventually about 35, maybe just under 40 people with their spouses turned up at the cocktail party pre-dinner. But the other 45, we got some, 40, whatever it was, we got some different responses. Now, some were living overseas. They couldn't come along. Some were interstate. They couldn't. But there were a few who said, I had a bugger of a time at school. How'd you get this number? You can piss off. I never. So.
Oh, that's sad.
Well, it is, but you can understand that. Like in later life, you realise, I got chucked out of a few classes, but I kept showing up and it was a social thing for me. And importantly, and I think this is probably where you're heading here, I started learning clarinet and then saxophone probably in year nine, then ended up in the school orchestra and I sang in the choir, right. And I marched in the cadet band, and those participatory accents, I think very fondly, remember them very fondly. And of course, had I not gone on to do it in later life, that's probably where the trouble started.
So when you were in cadets,
yep.
The tops of your shoes, were they the shiniest out of all of them?
Well, as we used to do in the band, we used to wear white gaiters, yeah. And we used to polish our brass within an inch of its life. Yeah. I'm not talking about our musical instruments, no. But the brass fittings on your...
On the belt.
On the belt and on your gaiters. Yeah. And, you know, I couldn't say mine were the shiniest, but we certainly took great pride in the Ivanhoe Grammar School cadet band. And we won lots of band competitions and we had fun. And we were given the license to be creative. The band master is still alive and I've let him know. We suggested to him that a good marching song, you know, we used to play Anchors Away and, yeah, you know, yeah. Traditional marching songs. But I said, what about the Mickey Mouse Club theme, sir? And he said, we could try it out. And so we started playing the Mickey Mouse theme and we formed a double M formation, and you know, so he you know, there was that sort of vibe where you could, you know, we were encouraged, you know, so yeah, I remember it very fondly.
So were you a cool kid in school?
No, I just mad. No, they knew so little about ADHD back in those days. You know, I got away with it though.
Good on you.
And also, I was on a scholarship to the school too, so I think I was a great disappointment to them. No, I mean,
Mum would be happy about that.
Well, she was. I remember the day she opened the letter, and it was very exciting because otherwise we wouldn't have gone to Ivanhoe Grammar. And it was great. It was great for me. And also, I stay in touch with the school over the years. Yeah. My first music teacher, who was another very important person in my life, he only died about 6 months ago, and I was honoured to speak at his funeral. Yeah. And so, you know, those people along the way that have encouraged me, have supported me, have given me a bit of a nudge in the right direction, yeah. Not always teachers, but, you know, friends and you know, like older musicians and people in showbiz, and they say, hang on a second, come over here. And yeah. Your mates will do that for you, Gav. They'll say, now, look, you're going okay, but you've got to pull your head in here or whatever, and, you know. So I've made a few phone calls over the years.
Good on you, mate. Now, is that when music came into your life, when you got the nod to join the band? Were you playing an instrument before the band?
I was playing recorder at Lower Plenty State School, but then Dr. Jolly in Eltham, I had bronchitis when I was about 10 years old, and he said, now, Nicky, I want you to take your medicine. You do some swimming. That'll be good for your lungs. As I remember it, almost as an afterthought, Gavin Wood, he looked at me and said, maybe play a wind instrument. So that's where Nan and Pop, Mum's folks, went and bought me a clarinet, which I still have. So 58 years down the track, I've still got the original clarinet, and I played that in the orchestra and then switched to saxophone because there was a vacancy actually in the cadet band. So that's how I got into the band when I was about, 12 or 13.
What happened between finishing school and getting better on the saxophone and joining Old 55 in Sydney? What was the transition?
Well, I was studying the sciences, and what sort of doctor I would have been, who knows, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But I was more interested in music. So in year 12, I changed back to music and humanities. I wanted to go to the conservatorium, and I had my life shot to pieces. What I was going to do was go to the con, and you get a Bachelor of Music, a Muz back, and then a Dip Ed, yeah. Diploma of Education, and you go and teach in a good school, and you do gigs on Friday and Saturday nights. So the plan was in concrete, it was engraved in stone, and then I didn't get into the con because they didn't take saxophone as a first instrument. Went off to Monash, did an arty arts course, lasted about 6 months there because some guy heard me practicing in my room. He said, hey, we need a horn player for the law review or whatever it was, the hall review. Yeah. And that was really good fun. So I dropped out, went and worked in a nightclub in St Kilda for the rest of 1973. Then met a bloke who was a saxophone teacher, and he asked me to join a band. And so we started working in that nightclub in St Kilda, and then he went up to the Gold Coast, and the nightclub band folded. And I thought, I'll just hitchhike up to the Gold Coast to see Pete. And I had a sleeping bag, a tenor saxophone, a couple of Charlie Parker records, and I hitched up to the Gold Coast. And I'd been on the coast having a cup of tea with Pete, and I reckon I'd been there for 2 hours. The phone rang, and it was a bloke who wanted a saxophone player, and I went down to a gig that they'd organised for me to do it, and it was a 10-day tour of Queensland with Roy Orbison playing in his band.
Fantastic. What an introduction to rock and roll.
Well, it wasn't. To see Roy hold the audience in the palm of his hand, I know that's a cliche, but he did. And he did that with the music, and he'd come out and he'd sing Pretty Woman or Leah and, you know, Working for the Man, and he never said much, but the audiences loved him. We were playing, we've got Brisbane Festival Hall, Toowoomba Town Hall, so, you know, good crowds, and he'd brought his American band with him. They were fantastic. I still remember how well they sang, you know, really good harmony singers from, you know, Nashville or Memphis, wherever he was living in those days. And there were a couple of older horn players from Brisbane that they'd added, a trombone player and a trumpet player, and they took me under their wing. And I rode in the same car as Roy, and we drove around. We went out to Toowoomba, as I mentioned, from the Gold Coast. That was the first gig. You know, I stood up there a few nights and went, hey, this looks good. Let's try and do a bit more of this.
That's incredible.
And then I went to Sydney the next year to study at the Con. Lasted about 6 months there doing the jazz course, and then I heard an ad on 2JJ, as it was, and the ad, so to speak, was, All 55 50s revival band require saxophone player. Show up at East Ride RSL if you reckon you're up to it. Yeah. And so I went out there, and I was the only bloke who showed up, and I saw Frankie J. Holden, and I thought, hey, he looks like a bit of fun. And of course, Frank in those days was a chartered accountant with Price Waterhouse. Yeah. He'd rock up at soundcheck, you know, half an hour later after he's rocked up in his suit and with his briefcase from Price Waterhouse. The transformation with half a tub of Brill cream and a gold lamé suit was manifest.
How did the name Wilbur Wilde come about? Where did you pluck that from?
After the Roy Orbison tour, I spent the rest of the year pretty much in a little nightclub called the Mousetrap, and six nights a week. And I was only thinking about that this morning. If you want a bit of a rock and roll connection, it was It was managed by a guy, this nightclub, named Vic Sutcliffe. But Vic Sutcliffe, now in his 80s, came to Australia with a band called Sounds Unlimited.
Yes, they were on the Beatles tour.
And he was their road manager, and he stayed here and managed the nightclub on the Gold Coast. So I, six nights a week, it was a steak joint. So I got a steak each night, a baked potato and some salad, plus $60 cash. I was 18 years of age, so things were going really well. And I met some great players and made some good friends. But at the end of that year, I joined Ray Brown and the Whispers. And Brownie, he was a lovely bloke. In that band was another name you'd know, which Yuck Harrison was playing bass from Max Merritt and the Meteors. There's a bloke from Thunderclap Newman named Roger Felice Andrew, who was a drummer. But Roger had imaginary friends, Vivian Varvum, who was an internationally famous fashion model, and her millionaire playboy consort was Wilbur Wilde. So I borrowed the name Wilbur Wilde from Roger Felice Andrew, and the first gig that I played, jumping forward to 1975, the first gig that I played with Old 55 was a live-to-air concert on 2JJ on the same bill. This is 1975, would have been about early August, and on the same bill as Captain Matchbox and Split Enz, who'd just arrived from New Zealand. At the end of our set, Frank turned around and he introduced the band, and he said, on drums, Drainpipe Plumber, Jimmy Boy Manzi on bass, and Rock Pile Jones on vocals. And he looked at me and he said, I'm Frankie J. Holden. And he looked at me, and instead of saying Little Nicky, Phyllis's boy, I said Wilbur Wilde. And I thought I'd just borrow it until I could think of something better, but it kind of stuck. It has done what? That's a... Yeah, it's only 49 years ago.
Kind of stuck. Now, you played tenor saxophone. Is that the big one or the small one?
Oh, it's the one in between.
One in between.
And Gav, look, you know, without creating another editing nightmare for you, people will call out to me and they go, G'day, Wilbur, where's your trombone? And I think, that's close enough. It's in the boot. No, really, really. I'm not going to argue with that. I go, that's close enough. He's had a shot. In the boot. It's shiny, it's loud.
Oh, man, that's so funny. Tobin Brothers believe every life is unique. Every funeral should be too. visit turbinbrothers.com.au.
You know how you were listening to Gavin Wood's podcast? Well, this is Wilbur Wilde, and I was listening to it, that's why I'm listening. It's Gavin Wood's podcast is Wilbur Wilde. I hope that's okay.
So 2 years with Old 55, and you certainly made a huge impact. And then in 75 to 77, you joined Joe Camilleri with JoJo Zep and the Falcons, one of the hottest bands going around. The Shape I'm In, Hit and Run, all those big songs.
Now, you've got to remember, Frank Holden and I joined Old 55 probably mid-July of 1975. So Frank and I left on the same day in May of 77. So we're only with the band for, May, June, July. It's like 22 months. Yeah. And then he left. Frank went off to pursue his acting interests. He was really interested, and they did some radio for a while too. Yeah. Oh, and here's a little Frank Holden story. They had Frankie J's Beachnik party or whatever it was, on 2WS in Sydney, right. And it only lasted about 6 weeks because the panel operator had let a call go through that was unsavory or something. I don't remember, but somebody had sworn or said, Frankie J, geez, your show's effing great and I'm effing loving it and whatever it was. Yeah. Right. So Frank only lasted about 6 weeks on radio. And the panel operator's name, George Denikian.
Oh, dear George. I'll have to remind him about that when I speak to him next.
I'm sure Frank has reminded him many times over the years.
Yeah.
So Frank left, and the reason I left is that when Frank announced that he was quitting, I thought, no, this is not going to be nearly as much fun without him. I'd met Eric, I mentioned at the con. Eric, by this time, May 1977, was playing with the John English Band. So Eric calls John, and John says, yeah, of course we need a horn player, great. So I rock up, sound check the next day, and later on that night, this is on the Monday, day after I've left Old 55, later on that night, I'm on stage with the John English Band, and they're supporting Brian Ferry on the Brian Ferry tour. And so we play a couple of gigs in Sydney, then we come down to Melbourne. So I did about five or six gigs there, and the last gig was after the wrestling at Festival Hall in Melbourne on a Sunday night. And I remember Brian Ferry walking in following a trail of, Skull Murphy's blood to the dressing room and going, oh, my dear boy, what's happened here? Oh, Brian in his fedora and his white linen suit. That tour took off to Perth. They didn't need me. So I went back to Phyllis's, and the next morning, Steve Hill, former lead singer of Skyhooks, and by then in 1977, managing JoJo Zep and the Falcons, called me and said, hey, Joe wants you at rehearsal tomorrow morning at Gary Young's place in North Baldwin. You're in the band. And that's when I joined the Falcons.
Right. So that was a very long tenure with the Falcons.
Four and a half years with the Falcons.
And you're still there, basically, aren't you? You're just every now and again.
Yeah, I've played on a few Black Sorrows albums over the years, and we've done a couple of Falcons reunion gigs, but Joe and I are still mates. And look, Tony and Jeff are still around as well, the guitar players who co-wrote Shape I'm In and Hit and Run. And Gary Young's still with us. Our bass player, John Power, sadly died about 5 or 6 years ago. And we did a great fundraiser for his daughter, actually, at the Memo in St Kilda. And, of course, they all came out of the woodwork, and the Falcons smashed it. And, Gav, it's a life sentence for us.
Well, you've just got to keep working and you never retire. Of course, 15 years with Hey Hey It's Saturday. I mean, how good was that? We didn't realise it back then, but it was groundbreaking stuff. What you were doing on Hey Hey, you and Red, and the comedy between Daryl and you guys, and being in a band like that, particularly, I love the Saturday mornings because they're the ones I did, but going into the nighttime shows, it was huge stuff that you did. No one's ever done that in this country.
Well, it's part of a function of later life when you reflect on. So now, at the time, it was fun, and you go, "This is great," and here I am working with Daryl, and now I'd. The show went nighttime in 1984, as you remember, and the studio were basically me, Des McKenna, who came to be known as Animal, and a guy from the Sports, Rob Glover, played with the Sports with Steve Cummings, of course, and he was our bass player. Now, I put the band together at Daryl's behest. There was nobody in the studio. We had an audience maybe twice that year for a dress up. So it was just this, you know, tight knit little team that we had. Daryl, Jackie, Ozzy, me, and the other two guys in the band on the floor with, you know, the legendary Phil Lambert and a couple of cameramen, and upstairs Blackers, the disembodied master of all voices. So, and Murray, of course.
How brilliant is John Blackman?
No Hey Hey without John Blackman. That's right. You know, we all understand that. And Murray Tregoning was up there doing sound effects. So it was really, and at the time you think, oh, this is great fun and everything like that. But look, upon reflection, you think, yeah, they were important times in our lives. Yeah, I mentioned earlier on that people still from that generation come and say hi and, oh, thanks. And, you know, our family used to watch it and thanks for the laughs. And I love that. I think it's so sweet that the recognition was there because it went berserk, of course. It just went berserk during the 90s. And went all over Australia and to Papua New Guinea and to New Zealand for a little bit. And very influential and was an honour to be a cast member.
We didn't realise the impact that it had when we were working in the show. It was like me on Countdown with Molly. You know, we didn't realise, you know, we just went in there and tried to do the best show. Every time we were there, we tried to do the best show. And we didn't take it for granted. And you know what? I think that was the magic of it all. If we kind of took it for granted and commercialised it, the whole thing would have fallen over.
Countdown was so important. Back to the old 55 in 1975 thing, right? We played Looking for an Echo on Countdown. On the strength of one appearance on Countdown for an Australian band, you could tour the East Coast for 6 weeks. So Countdown was like an incredibly important thing. And, you know, we'd watched it and then all of a sudden you're on it and then people would come up in the street and recognise you. And, you know, that was a similar thing to Hey Hey at Saturday where there was it was an appointment on Sundays. At 6 o'clock, you know, everybody in the world would be watching Countdown and Hey Hey Saturday sort of approach that kind of thing on 6:30 on Saturday nights. But two very important shows and Molly's support and your support for the Australian music scene. And, you know, and the internationals, you know, lots of internationals were broken, so to speak, brought to our attention by Molly Meldrum being an enthusiast and astute observer of what was going to work.
And I'm looking forward to working with you now in our older age with Gavin Wood's Countdown live shows around Australia. You're on the bill and we're going to have a lot of fun, my friend.
Well, look, we've got such a wealth of great tunes and Australian culture from which to draw, and I'm looking forward also to those gigs, as I look forward to live performance of any description. Gav, I've had the pleasure to serve alongside some of the great front people in this country and work alongside some of the television presenters and the radio presenters. And so it's all live performance upon which I will continue to thrive until further notice, okay? Yeah. So we'll have a ball. Yeah. We'll be rocking in. We'll be lurching in there. And the trouble will start when they what do they do with these gigs these days? Is there a red light that lets us know we go on that it's time to go on? Or does somebody kick us like the old days? Get on there. Get on there now.
The trouble will start as soon as you walk on the stage. Now, speaking of stages, tell me about your 750 performances in the Rocky Horror Show. Now, you would have seen many narrators over that time.
My narrator was Red Simons during that period, but his cover for Sydney, I only did a few shows without Red because we would come back, of course, to do the television show. So we did. We opened in 92 in July at the Comedy, did about 16 weeks, then went to Adelaide, did about 8 weeks up until Christmas. Then we opened in Sydney for about 13 weeks. We ended up in Singapore later that year and Brisbane, Perth. The people that I've seen were I saw four different Frankenfurters,
yes,
all of which had their own merit. Now, our first Frankenfurter, and marvellous he was, great singer, great guitar player, fine actor, is Craig McLaughlin. Mm-hmm. And he was a person who would go, like he'd just smash it every night, and he would go out of his way to ensure that the spirits of the company were kept up. He was replaced for Craig had a thing. He went to London to do Greece with Debbie Gibson in 92, and he was replaced by Marcus Graham, who was unbelievable. Marcus is not, you know, renowned as a singer or a guitar player as Craig is, but Marcus's acting was just forget about it. He was so like what. The difference between Craig and Marcus was, and I noticed this in Adelaide, that there wasn't a man or woman for that. There wasn't a woman or man, for that matter, in the Adelaide audience who didn't think Marcus was just about the sexiest thing you've ever seen on stage. Mm. So that was a great experience. Then Jason Donovan joined us in Perth, yeah, and JD was just sensation. Right. It was a lot of fun with Jason. And then, of course, the great Tim Ferguson. We did about 6 months in Sydney, at the halfway through 1998, and Tim Ferguson is still a great mate and one of the great minds of one of the great funny brains of this country, confined to a wheelchair because of multiple sclerosis these days. But I still stay in touch with Fergie, and he was an incredible, incredible Frankenfurter.
Any song can be played at a funeral. What would you like? Visit TobinBrothers.com.au.
G'day, this is Wilbur Wilde. You are listening to Gavin Wood's podcast.
Now, you also appeared in movies like Mad Max, Cool and Gutter Gold, Trojan Warrior, and many more. The movie career could have, you could have ended up the next Russell Crowe.
Nah.
Good on you. And then came radio. You've got a gift to the gab, Gold 104.3, Vega 91.5, and you're also on XY and UZ back in the time. And now you're bobbing up on late nights on ABC Radio. You've done it all, my friend.
I enjoyed the recent stint on overnights on ABC. Yeah. Just did 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th of January, 2 till 6 in the morning. And, look, I was surprised a little bit myself as to how comfy it felt. But what happens there is the callers, there were some regulars, there were some new ones, and they just make you feel really welcome. So I enjoyed that. And I started off doing brekkie at UZ with Blackers too. And that's really, as you would understand, Gav, in your experience, years of radio, that our socialising, Blackers and I was working on Hey Hey, at the time, but we started socialising on radio. That's when you really, you know, you start getting into each other's heads and, you know, there's a trust thing there. You're working as a team and everything. So that was
soul. You also bare your soul as well, don't you?
So, yeah, that's what I mean. We were sharing things, of course, that will go to the grave with us. Yeah. I remember talking with Ernie Carroll, and Ernie, he said to me, I said, well, how did you go when you were, you know, when you were just in the studio by yourself? And he said to me, he said, well, Wilbur, I spoke into the microphone as if I were talking to a friend, and that light bulb immediately went off in my head, and I thought that made so much sense to me. You know, I've sort of had some good instructors along the way, of course.
I remember having a pizza with you at the Rainbow Bar and Grill in Sunset Boulevard in West Hollywood.
No, excuse me. Yes. It was a steak. And it was really good. It was one of those American 2-inch thick New York cut. I had mine medium rare, and I remember that night very, very well. It was a ripper steak up at the Rainbow with you. Gavin Wood continues.
That was a fun night, and then I drove you back to your hotel room by Union Station. And then the next day you were taking the train to where, and what were you doing?
It was in 2010, and I went up. It was actually Independence Day, wasn't it? It was July 4. I went up on the Coast Starlight, 33 hours it took to get to Portland, Oregon, and I waited there for about an hour and caught the train straight away to Chicago, the Empire Builder, which was supposed to be about another 57 hours, but it ended up with a couple of delays. So I spent about 90 hours on the Amtrak. I had my sleeper cab. I was nice and comfy, traveling from Los Angeles to
Chicago via Portland, Oregon. And I've done that trip, or a different trip again, when I came back a couple of years later. I went across the desert to Chicago and then down to Louisville, Kentucky, where I did a little summer jazz course at the University of Louisville. Caught the bus back to Chicago and then the train to Lakeshore Limited from Chicago to New York. That's an overnighter. I just travelled by myself both of those times, but it was lovely catching up with you back then. And I remember the rainbow very nicely. You showed me a great night and set me up for what was a very interesting journey, because, as you know, people live everywhere in the United States. And I got to meet some of them and heard some good stories. And, of course, the New York jazz scene was mighty. So, yeah, I'd do it again in a heartbeat. But I'd take best ever girlfriend Sherry with me this time.
Yes. Tell me about best ever girlfriend. You look very comfortable, the both of you. It seems like you found your soulmate.
Sherry and I met at a Seekers concert, a Seekers matinee at the Dame Elizabeth Murdoch Recital Hall on November the 2nd, 2019. And she had, Cherry, her client, an 89-year-old dementia patient, that Cherry, she's a palliative care nurse, and he was in love with Judith. So she had taken him to see the concert, and I went to see Keith and Bruce and Assel, and our dear friend Michael Cristiano, who stands up the front with him, is the musical director and record producer now. And so Michael had left a ticket for me, and I sat down. I sort of had Desi, the old client, and Cherry was sitting, sort of, he was on the aisle, she was one seat in, and then there was a spare seat, you know, G23 or whatever it was. And I ootched my way through, and she stood up and I said, oh, excuse me, that's my seat next to you. And she said, well, isn't this your lucky day? And so she's South African. And, I mean, for heaven's sake, it was a Seekers concert. You know, part of the seniors' experience is you're not supposed to score at the recital hall at a Seekers concert. Not that I scored on that day. But we started talking, and I realised she was a very kind person, and we fell in love. And in fact, a New Year's Eve, seven or eight weeks later, I said, I love you. That was the first time. So
that's lovely, Willie.
And that came about because of the Seekers. Yeah. I know I'll never find another use.
You must get recognized all over the world, Willie. There's no escape. Do you enjoy that recognition?
Well, look, I've sort of touched on it before. People come up at gigs or just in the street, you know, because I live a fairly normal life. I don't live in a gated community or, behind a high hedge. So I'm out there, have been for all of that time, and they'll come up and they say, oh, g'day, Wilbert. Now, look, you don't know me and you must get sick of this, but we watched Hey Ho. I said, hang on, let's start again. Mm. What's your name? G'day, John. Yeah, now we know each other. And for starters, I never get sick of it thanks, mate. You know, and people, it's really sweet that they come up. And it's 25 years this year since we finished in 1999, and we did our reunion shows in 2010. But, the big run, and I did 17 years there. So, you know, from 84 through to 99 was 16 years, and then we did the reunion shows. It's been a big part of life, you know. In fact, 17 years, that's almost half my life, Gav. I mean, I turned 30, we'll look later on this year anyway. You know?
Yeah, well, we're all pixies, mate. We're all pixies. Now, I remember your guest appearance with Mark Knopfler of Dire Straits. And also, if memory serves me right, you walked on stage with Garth Brooks.
Garth Brooks, of whom I was a big fan.
So was I. I was there. I was at that concert.
Right. Now, I bought tickets to see Garth Brooks. When was that, 97, 98?
Or around there sometime, yeah.
And I had half a dozen, if not a dozen, of his albums. When he appeared on the Hey Hey Saturday show, I said, oh, g'day, look, I'm a big fan, and I really have enjoyed your work over the years. And, of course, I had a saxophone strapped around my neck. I was just in the studio, and he said, well, would you mind miming a saxophone solo on the track that I'm going to play today? And I said, I wouldn't usually, but for you I will, you know. And so I mimed the saxophone solo. And he said, hey, why don't you come and play with us? I said, you haven't even heard me play. And he said, yeah, you'll be fine. And so a couple of nights later, he introduced me on stage at Rod Laver Arena. Yeah. And, you know, he said, oh, we've been in town for, in Melbourne, we've been made very welcome. We've made a couple of great friends here, and one of them's going to come out and play saxophone. And he said, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, they went, people went nuts.
And there were so many cowboy hats in the audience, wasn't there?
Yeah, and they threw their cowboy hats in the air, and they were whooping and hollering, which is what country audiences do. Yeah. And Garth Brooks walked back to the microphone, and he said, hey, just remember, this is a Garth Brooks concert. And he gave me a nice wink, and we played the song, and it went great. And, of course, after I'd finished playing the song, I just packed up my saxophone, ran back out the front and watched the rest of the show with my two mates that I'd invited, and it was a fantastic show.
And it's the only tour he's ever done of Australia.
The production values were incredible. The number that I played probably, it was like a dozen songs in, and I knew that the number before I had to go up there. But I stayed out the front, we just sat in our seats and watched the first bit of the show. And then I thought, a bit of go. Ran backstage, played the one tune with him, which was fantastic. I mean, it was great walking out there. I mean, it's always, mighty walking on stage with, and doing that. And, just went straight back out and watched the rest of that incredible show. And I'm still a fan. I think he's just great.
Oh, yeah. So am I. Now, tell me about the Mark Knopfler one. He got his nose out of joint, didn't he?
Well, it's a story I've told about 10,000 times. I played with them in 1983. Mm. They needed a saxophone player, and the two tunes for which they needed a horn player were like Twistin' by the Pool and that great theme from the movie Local Hero, which is called Going Home, right? So, and they sent the tapes, and I learnt my parts and everything, and we get to sound check in Canberra. I had to fly up to Canberra to the Canberra Sports Stadium, and eventually got on stage. He's like, the build up to that Going Home tune is like really, it's like this really intense sort of semi-acoustic guitar solo, and you can hear a pin drop in the place. There's a spotlight on him, the rest of the band's in darkness, and he's just out the front. Mark, don't get me wrong, Mark Knopfler, great singer, terrific songwriter, wizard guitar player, like just a fine all round musician. I had no issue with that. But during sound check, I said to him, hey, who plays saxophone on that? And he said, Michael Brecker is the greatest saxophone player in the world. And, of course, I can't help myself. I said, yeah, he's all right. And Knopfler can't let it go. And he said, no, he's the greatest saxophone player in the world. I go, he's okay. So come show time, and the tour manager says, right, okay, go and stand next to John Isley. Here's your cue to come in on the holiday and everything like that. So I stand out there. Would have been, like 20 metres, a huge stage, 20 metres back from the front of it, and Knopfler's out there, doing this thing. He's got, trancing the audience, and they're loving it and everything like that. And I get recognised. 1983. So the Falcons were huge in Canberra. They were all 55. I used to play the CAEs and the clubs up there, and I get recognised by a few people in the audience, and and you just hear this, from row 5, and then Knopfler's looking at me thinking, what's going on here? And anyway, it was just all a little bit confusing for him. That said, I went backstage after the gig and said, look, what can I say? And he dug it. He sort of understood. And I said, look, and he said, yeah, I get it. And they gave me a ride back to Sydney on their private jet. So I don't think there were any hard feelings. Just off the back of that, Gav, I only ever did one gig with Dire Straits. So what do you reckon? I just did just the one gig. They never asked me. Anyway, you were going to say.
One was enough.
Can't figure out. He never calls. Anyway.
Who are your musical heroes?
Well, I've got lots of them, of course. And when I was doing the ABC radio back in early January, I went round to Ross Wilson's house, and I took a recording device, and I did about a 20-30 minute interview with Ross, and eventually ran, and the main bit of it was about 5 minutes of Ross talking about the early days of Daddy Cool, and I led into what I consider to be one of the underrated vocal performances in Australian recording history, and that is Ross Wilson singing I'll Never Smile Again.
Oh, beautiful song.
And then I also did an interview with my old mate, I've mentioned him before, Eric McCusker, and he talked with me about the state of the heart. So just hearing the songwriters talk about their early life and what those songs meant to them and you know, was really nice. And look, oh, I mean, the people that shaped the culture of this country, Cad, Shorrock, you know, Braithwaite and Thorpe, and, you know, I know I'm leaving heaps out, but, you know, Dr. Neeson and the Angels and for heaven's sake, you know, you're putting me on the spot here. Camilleri, I mean, I got to, you know, Camilleri is just incredible what he's done. And also, you know, the earlier people. I mean, I knew Ron Tudor and, you know, one of the fathers of the Australian recording industry. And, you know, I got to record with, you know, Kevin Borich. And, I mean, it's not about me. It's about those people. And with Renee, I saw Renee and played with Renee many times. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, they were incredible. And they're just the Australians. Mm. Right, they're just the Australian. I happened to walk into Mario's the other day in Brunswick Street, Fitzroy, and bumped into Colin Hay. So there you go. You know, and I mean, you know, we were sort of, you know, ships passing in the night at the time, but and we touched on this earlier today too, is that at the time, it's all good fun and everything, and everyone's having a ball, and you're playing some gigs and things like that. But upon reflection, you realise those guys, I mean, you knew that they were good and, you know, that they were, you know, but those guys and those chicks were really important.
Mm, of course. Now, what makes Wilbur Whale get out of bed every day?
Oh, the thought of doing more of this. The thought of another gig, the thought of the search for truth, beauty and laughs.
Good on you, mate. Do you have any hobbies?
I golf still, but I try to practice saxophone a lot now. I read heaps of articles, and I should actually read more novels, but that's just a little bit on the back burner. I've got about 18 books stacked up on the bedside table, and I'll finish them one of these days and then move on to the next 18, which I've stacked in the sock drawer. And but I keep up with American politics. I can barely look at the Middle East at the moment. And world affairs has always been interesting to me. And I'm more interested in history now than I've ever been. So, I'm curious. I'm continually curious and interested in stuff.
Good. What's your favourite food?
I had some Cabana, some Jets crackers, some tasty cheese, and half a tub of tzatziki last night. There you go.
That's healthy for you.
and my best ever girlfriend looks at me every now and then. She says, "You know, you eat like an 18-year-old."
Well, but I want you to name three dinner guests, dead or alive.
I would throw in Barack Obama. I think he'd be nice. I would like to throw in a guy that you wouldn't have heard of. It's a guy named Yuri Avnery, who is an Israeli peace activist but former gunfighter, which was the resistance against the British. And I think a woman that I would love to have there, and I think she's actually probably a bit old now, and she wouldn't respond to my invite. I would have loved to have had Madeleine Albright, but there are so many off the top of my head. Hillary Clinton is great. You know who I really like? She was a rocket too. Fran Kelly. There you go.
Yeah. Hey, that would be an interesting table.
Are you okay to come along too? Yeah, I can whack the extension leaf in the middle of the table.
Yes. Wilbur, final question. What would you say to a budding young saxophonist?
Long notes is a good one, but it's all about arpeggios and scales. And learn tunes. Just keep learning tunes. And what will happen there is you'll start writing your own stuff and you'll start playing like stuff. But in the learning of the arpeggios and the scales, you listen to a lot of people. And that's what happens. You listen to the masters and you go, oh, yeah, that's an arpeggio and a scale that I can make sense of. And then you learn tunes and then you're improvising over those tunes. And the two most important words in anyone's life, I think, whatever you're doing, are pattern recognition. There, I've said it out loud.
And I think I get that. Pattern recognition is the base of the music line, which gives you the opportunity to improvise away from that pattern. Is that correct?
Away from it or utilising it. But I think pattern recognition is very important for lots of things, for human behaviour, for your own sense of identity. I don't want to overstate it, but I just remember a bright friend of mine, Radford, said those words to me 40 years ago, and he made it sort of at the time made a bit of sense, but I realise now that I think it's really important, and it's to do with mathematics, it's to do with jokes, it's to do with art, it's to do with improvisation, as you mentioned, but it's I think it's an important thing.
You're mad. I love you. And continued success, my friend.
Gig at the gig, man. Bye for now. Have a great rest of day.
Same with you. Take care.
This podcast brought to you thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives every day of the year.